Greetings, everyone. Thanks for joining me today. The theme of this talk is metaphoric images as a portal to another realm, another dimension. And I want to start by telling you a few things about my background and how I came to be doing the work that I'm doing now, because it definitely chose me. This wasn't what I expected to be doing in my life. First of all, images are the heart of the creative process, and I grew up in a family that, like the culture at large, valued science very highly and dismissed creativity as unimportant and certainly not real work. So I became a computer scientist. And in my mid-20s, I was working for a large Fortune 500 company in downtown Chicago. I took a weekend trip with my boyfriend at the time, and I had an experience that first night that changed the course and direction of my life. We had traveled to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and driving along the highway at 65 miles an hour, a car crossed the center line and hit us head-on. I was wearing a seatbelt, but because of the position I was sitting in the car and the force of the impact, I was critically injured. I broke T12 in my back, and my spinal cord was displaced by 40 degrees. I was given less than 5% chance of walking again by the doctors who eventually examined me at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, where I was airlifted. I did recover from that accident, and I was able to walk again after many months. And there are two parts to that story that are important for this talk today. The first is that first night when I arrived in the volunteer ambulance at this county hospital in the middle of the night somewhere, in excruciating pain and traumatized, the nurse walked over to me after she saw my condition. And she whispered in my ear to imagine that I was floating on a cloud. So I closed my eyes and I imagined myself floating on a cloud, and that shifted everything. It relaxed my body. It was comforting. At that point, I was facing the fear of never being able to walk again. And that imaginary but very real cloud got me through the trauma. It shifted me into a place of peace, and it got me through the worst pain I've ever been in my life. And that was my first real experience of the power of metaphor and the metaphoric realm and how central it is for shifts, breakthroughs, and healing. So let's try that right now, just briefly. Close your eyes for a moment and imagine that you're floating on a cloud. The first thing you might notice as you imagine this is that in order to float on a cloud, your body has to be light. What does it mean for you right now in your life to be lighter? And whenever I work with metaphor, the quality that always comes through is gentleness. There's a real beauty and gentleness in the metaphoric realm. So just notice what you notice about floating on a cloud. You might want to notice whether you feel like staying on this cloud, whether the cloud feels like moving or shape-shifting into something else. We're working with the creative process when we work with metaphor, so things are always in movement. I'm going to move on to the rest of the lecture now, but I wanted to give you that quick demonstration to show you how metaphor has the capacity to shift us into a new state and a new way of being, and all it takes is a moment to tap into it. The second part of the accident story that I want to share is this, and it's only in looking back on it years later that I put the dots together. In the months leading up to that accident, I worked out for 2 or 3 hours every single day, intensely. Intense lap swimming, intense racquetball with my coworkers. I was intensely working out in those months. And I've never done that before or since. It was like some part of me, some unconscious part of me, knew that the accident was going to happen and was preparing for it. I recovered from the accident after a spinal fusion and metal rods, but I recovered because my body was in top physical condition. So as I said, that accident changed the course of my life. I was in recovery for a long time, so it gave me a long time to reflect on my life and what lit me up. And I realized that I loved learning. I was working in the artificial intelligence field, so I was trying to be close to learning, working with computers. But I wanted the real thing. And I had become disillusioned with artificial intelligence, realizing that there was no way that computers could replace humans at their best, at their most creative, most realized selves. The creative is where we're most alive. So after this time of recovery, I ended up becoming a PhD student at the University of Chicago, which I never would have done before. It was completely outside of the realm of possibility that I had for my life. It was like the accident bumped me from one life to another, from one track to another. I got a PhD at the University of Chicago in adult learning. My advisor was Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, the author of Flow and many other books. And he asked me when I was a student with him to co-author a couple of articles on learning in museums. And if you're interested in those, you can look those up online. So graduate school was a wonderful experience. And when I graduated, my left brain was completely fried. I couldn't look at words without feeling nauseous, and even words on the back of a cereal box made me feel really ill. So for lack of anything better to do at the time, since I couldn't read or write, I started giving psychic readings at the Berkeley Psychic Institute. I had moved to Berkeley, California after I got my PhD. Giving those readings at the Berkeley Psychic Institute turned out to be an important part of my life path, and not just a frill thing to do, although I didn't know it at the time. I was just looking for adventure and new experiences now that I was in Berkeley, and I thought I was doing something really crazy and wacky. When I gave the readings, I noticed that I wasn't predicting people's futures. I was going under the surface and reading what I call the metaphoric realm. I wasn't telling someone they were going to meet a tall, dark stranger. I was looking at whatever they were asking about and looking under the surface. I might say something like, you're in the mud right now, but you can move. It's just taking longer than you expected. Or that direction is closed to you, but there's an opening to your left. What does the left direction mean to you? I was looking at their creative process metaphorically. This space, this non-ordinary dimension, is precognitive. And it's the place where we can see things before they manifest in the ordinary world. We can tap in and work with that energy. And that is exciting. So I did psychic readings for a while, but then when I was ready to get serious about my career again, I dropped all that and I started teaching. I taught in the teacher credentialing program at UC Berkeley, and I taught other classes at a few other schools. And I thought that I had left metaphor and psychic readings far behind. So about 7 years pass, and I'm interviewing for a teaching position at a graduate school in the Bay Area. And the president of the school in the interview sort of looked at me quizzically, and then he said, instead of trying to fit you into our program and have you teach something on our roster, why don't you tell me what you'd like to teach? And it was a prophetic moment and a prophetic question because Spirit spoke through me and said, metaphor. I was in shock. I didn't know anything about metaphor as an academic subject and how it related to psychology. And while I was in this state of shock, the president of the school picked right up on it like nothing out of the ordinary had just happened and said, great, we'll call it the psychology of metaphor. And I walked out of that office not knowing what I was doing or what was going on. And the first class I'd be teaching was going to be a class of PhD students that would start in 2 months. But not surprisingly, since Spirit was speaking through me that day, Spirit developed the class for me. I lived in Marin County at the time, and I liked to work at the San Francisco Graduate Theological Union Library, if anyone knows where that is, on the top of this high hill in Marin County of California. And I'd go up there, and I'd sit at one of the long tables to work, and I'd just glance up from the table, and there in front of me would be some arcane, out-of-print book about metaphor and the psychology of metaphor, and that's how the course developed. One of these books, the most remarkable of them, was by a man named Martin Foss, who wrote a book called Symbol and Metaphor in Human Experience that had been published in 1949 and had been out of print for many, many years. This book was extraordinary, about how metaphor is the creative process of life itself. For example, he says, "Metaphor is the secret of all life. It is the innermost secret of the life of God himself," end quote. So I did some research about Martin Foss because I was blown away by his work, and my graduate students were also blown away by his work. And I discovered that at the time the book was published, Martin Foss was considered by many academics to be a greater philosopher than Martin Heidegger. And for whatever reason, even though there was a lot of interest in this book, it was later listed by the academic scholar as one of the most important and neglected books of the 20th century. And no one academically that I know has ever heard of Martin Foss. So I highly recommend, if you like academic reading and you can get a copy of it, there used to be a few used copies available online. I also set up a Wikipedia page for him a few years ago. And I also have contact with a couple of people who knew him back in the 1960s when he was still alive. They were both profoundly impacted by him. So that's not the end of my story. Teaching this course on the psychology of metaphor was a spiritual experience and a very opening experience for me. It caused me to look at the world differently. I was walking around looking at the world frustrated because I knew there was some realm of beauty that we couldn't see with ordinary eyes, but it was there beneath the surface. And I kept looking around me asking, how do we see that beauty? How do we see that beauty? I wanted to be able to see it, but I didn't know how. About 2 months after the metaphor class ended, I had a profound, totally life-changing visionary experience where I was shown this realm by Spirit, and it was urgently made known to me that guiding people to this realm would be my life's work. I'm an academic, I'm introverted, I love research and writing. I am not, by any means, a spiritual guru or anything like that. So sharing anything, quote, spiritual is really pretty far outside of my comfort zone. And the reason I'm sharing it with you today is not to talk about myself, but because this is depth psychology. This realm of profound beauty is depth psychology. And I'm sure that many of you have had experiences of non-ordinary reality that led you to study and be interested in depth psychology. And these experiences, these depth experiences, need to be in mainstream conversation. They need to be valued and honored and not swept under the rug or dismissed, as I did for so many years. These experiences of otherworldly beauty need to be integrated into the culture as a central way of learning and knowing. This non-ordinary realm urgently wants to be known. So my work is with metaphor, and I often get asked, what's the difference between a metaphoric image and a regular image? A metaphoric image is alive. It's awake. It has something it wants to say to you. To give you a simple example, let's suppose we have an image of one of those old-fashioned freezers before there was such a thing as an automatic defroster. And inside the freezer compartment, it's really thick with ice. this could be just a literal image. But if it's a metaphoric image, it has something it wants to say to you. It might be telling you that you're boxed in, and if you could simply thaw out the walls that are surrounding you in your life, you'd feel much better. Or perhaps it's telling you that you need some warmth in your life, or that you need a small space right now to feel safe. Another example is, we could make the statement, Ted is like a freight train, which is very interesting, but it doesn't take you anywhere. We have Ted, and we have a freight train, and we have some similarities between the two. But if we said, Ted is a freight train, that statement doesn't make sense to our rational minds. Of course, Ted isn't a freight train. And whenever we're working with something that our mind doesn't understand, it gives up, and our imagination is able to take over. That's one way we enter the metaphoric dimension. We humans draw on metaphor whenever we're dealing with something that our minds can't understand. Unexpected life events, times when we feel confused or overwhelmed, or whenever we're stepping into something that's unknown or uncertain, we grasp for metaphor to make meaning. We might say, I'm in over my head, or I don't feel grounded, or I feel small. These are metaphors, and they give us not only an image, but they give us a feeling sense, and that feeling sense is very important. That feeling sense gives us a direction, and I'll say more about that later. Metaphor is the primary way in which new ideas are introduced into the culture. It's the heart of the creative process, as I said before. The physicist Niels Bohr and his work on the atomic structure and quantum theory was inspired by the metaphor of cubism and cubist paintings. Chaos theory, cloud technology, having a desktop on your computer, the examples of metaphor in the scientific realm are infinite. When scientists or any of us try to create something new or introduce a new idea, we have to use metaphor. And in the case of every historic scientific discovery and invention that is researched carefully enough, we find that it was metaphoric imagery which produced the breakthrough. As many wise men have said, Carl Jung, Einstein, etc., problems aren't solved on their own level. We have to go to a place that's higher, a place that resolves the polarities. Metaphor runs throughout our culture, of course, but it's underground. It's under the surface of how we view things and what we do and say. It shapes our learning and our perspective in ways we're not even aware of. It's not something we pay attention to because it's underneath the level of language. I'm just going to give you a quick example. Many years ago, I attended a large conference on social change, and one of the keynote speakers was talking about his work protecting the rainforest. And as he spoke, it was clear that the primary metaphor that was driving his work was war. He was at war with the large corporations and others that were plundering the rainforest. Now, his work could be guided by a different key metaphor. And the question is the key metaphor that's guiding his work that is so important in this world, is that image generative and expansive and healing? Is it taking his work into new possibilities, into new creative terrain? Or is the focus and perspective, the lens that he's looking through, is it keeping him and his work stuck and small? Because when we're in a polarity with something or some organization or some person, we're stuck. Many of our unconscious metaphoric images are coming from our culture, from our egos, from our fearful minds. They're not coming from this amazing aesthetic dimension of beauty and creative possibility. All of you are living your lives by primary guiding metaphors, and each situation that you encounter in life, each little problem that needs to be addressed, each relationship in your life, they all hold metaphoric lenses. The question is that metaphoric lens serving you? How might it be more expansive and more generative? There is a dimension that we can tap into that will open up your life, expand whatever it is you're doing, and show you new opportunities, creativity, and resources that you never would have known were available to you. When I work with clients in doorway sessions, we step into the metaphor, which brings us to this other dimension, the feeling dimension. And we learn and navigate our way around this dimension by feeling. I grew up in a farming family in Iowa. My father was a farmer, his father before him, and generations beyond that. So growing things in the soil have always been key images for me. This dimension is like fertile soil. The example I often give is to imagine that you're a worm in the soil. You can't see your way ahead. You navigate your way in the soil by feeling. Albert Einstein described it as a feeling for the order lying behind the appearance. So this dimension that we're working with here, the metaphoric realm, is real. And when something is alive, you can feel it. When you discover or receive a healing metaphor in this realm, the feeling sense of it is the key to the shift. It's the key to the breakthrough, to a new way of being and knowing. Feeling is how we connect with the creative forces of the universe. The law of attraction says that to manifest anything new, we need to feel what it's like to have it. Metaphor allows us to do that. Metaphor allows us to feel and be what our souls want to manifest in the world. And feeling, of course, is not the same thing as emoting. Raw, undirected emotion like anger, fear, rage, frustration, grief actually gets in the way of our ability to step into and feel the subtle wisdom of a metaphoric image. In fact, our minds often interpret metaphoric images like darkness or caves or ropes as negative. But we're working with the creative process when we work with metaphor, so none of these images are actually negative. The creative process is always in movement. We might be moving from something closed to something more expansive, but we're never stuck. The dimension that we step into is a realm of creative possibility. We have infinite space available to us to create and manifest new things, including new ways of being and new perspectives. And so, because we're stepping into the image, simpler images tend to be much more powerful than complex images. With metaphor, if there's a lot of complexity, our minds get involved in analyzing it. And as I said, this is about feeling and letting that feeling shift you into a different space. In some ways, it's similar to pulling a tarot card. When we pull a tarot card, we don't sit and analyze the image of the Empress on the card. The Empress card is a pointer to the wisdom that you're seeking. It's not about the card itself. So the images are a starting point for us to step into this dimension, this symbolic, metaphoric dimension. Just like if you would step into a movie, although what we're stepping into is a real place, a real space. It's not make-believe. We're working with a subtle energy in this dimension. The images that show up shift our cells and shift our vibratory energies, as you noticed with the cloud exercise. After we've stepped into the image and felt its wisdom, that image continues to work us in a non-cognitive way. We don't need to spend time analyzing it or figuring it out. The shift in this dimension comes in feeling it in your body. When you've done that, you've experienced its wisdom. The work is gentle, beautiful, and directional. and it has a way that it wants to move. This is the creative movement of life. I find this dimension fascinating. It's fascinating to me how real it is and how exquisitely beautiful and intense it is, and how it's a very powerful source of change in life, and yet our culture doesn't see it or value it. And I want to thank you all for being pioneers with me. There are many examples throughout history of cultural change happening by someone finally being able to see something. For example, we've probably all heard the story of Columbus's ships out at sea, and the shaman on the tribe couldn't see them at first. They were outside of his frame of reference. I've also heard about a tribe in Africa called the Himba tribe that can't see the color blue. If there's a blue square next to a lot of green squares, they think they're all green. They can't see the blue square. To our Western eyes, the blue square is screaming out for attention, but they can't see it. And I'm not saying this to give an example of how superior we are, because our culture has many things that we don't see, and this realm is one of them. Another thing that's fascinating to me is how our minds believe that complex problems require complex solutions. So we work so hard trying to come up with complex plans and schedules. But what's true is that when we shift our energy, when we shift our perspective, everything changes. An example of that might be, say we have some problem that's been eating away at us, and then we have the opportunity to get in a spacecraft and zoom out into space and see planet Earth from a far, far distance. I'm sure that whatever issue we had in our regular life is going to be forgotten in the midst of that profound shift of perspective and witnessing the immense beauty of planet Earth. That's what happens when we step into this realm, when we really step into it. We see and feel things differently. Another fascination for me is that there's such beauty in simplicity. I'm fascinated by beauty. This realm is a realm of deep beauty. I want to share something that Greg Braden wrote in his book, Secrets of the Lost Mode of Prayer. And by the way, I do believe that metaphor is the lost form of prayer. It was how ancient humans communicated with one another and how they communicated with the earth and its animals. This form of communication was lost when spoken and then written language became widespread. So here's what Braden writes. The power of beauty is real. In its presence, we are changed. The power of beauty appears to be dormant until we give it our attention. While it may very well have the power to change our world, that power is asleep until it's awakened. And we are the only ones who can awaken it. As the only form of life with the power to experience beauty, it is awakened only when we acknowledge it in our lives. End quote. He might have intended this statement to mean something in a general way, perhaps about the beauty of the natural world. But to my mind, his statement is much deeper than that. We have the power to open up and tap into this realm of deep beauty. When something of exquisite, non-ordinary beauty happens to you, I hope that this talk will be something that you can draw on to help you integrate the experience, validate and honor it, and share it with others. We all have the power to awaken the beauty. As a scholar of adult learning, I've always wanted to know, how do adults learn? How does cultural change happen? We don't grow or change sitting in a classroom reading a book, figuring out something in our heads about how to go from step one to step two. We go out into the world and we have experiences. The traditionally accepted ways of learning and knowing in our culture have been far too limited for far too long. We have an entire realm of profound beauty and deep wisdom that urgently wants to be known and tapped into. that will give us answers, guidance, opportunities that we wouldn't be able to access in any other way. So I'm just going to end here with a message that came for a client in a doorway session because I think it's useful and it gives a sense of the type of wisdom that shows up for someone from this realm. These aren't my words, they're coming from this other dimension and they're given as a way to help the person feel, heal, and shift. And even though this message was for someone else, as you listen to the words, see if you can step into them. Imagine yourself stepping into the image that's speaking. I am the image. I would like to expand out. You have seen me now. You know that I exist. Thank you. Now let me expand. I am not something that you can figure out, like a tool in your toolbox. I am not that. I am something you will enter, a new space that you will enter. Enter me now. Imagine being inside of me. What will you do inside of me? You have to feel me first before you'll know what to do. Feel into me. Let the cells of your body know me. I'm a new space for you. So thanks so much for joining me today. I'd love for you to join me for a doorway session if you're interested. I also do groups. You can find me at kimhermanson.com. And if you go to my website, kimhermanson.com, there are some free offers there. There are two documents you can download for free. One is called 5 Tips for Creative Breakthroughs, and the other is Doorways into the Creative, which gives further information and guidance for entering this realm. I also have lots of articles about metaphor in my blog, and if you're interested, check out my book, Getting Messy, A Guide to Taking Risks and Opening the Imagination. Thanks a lot.